Okay, good morning, everybody. Welcome back to our 3 Ideas in 30 Minutes, an opportunity to prepare ourselves for Shabbos, to have meaningful Divrei Torah and conversations at our Shabbos table. It is so nice to see everybody this morning, especially those who have chosen to keep their cameras on, so I'm not talking just to a wall. It is very much appreciated. As always, I want to thank our sponsor for this series, sponsor anonymously in memory of Teddy Kellen, Shimon Tuvia Ben Dov, Yehuda Leib Chaim. Our learning should be an aliyah for his neshama, a continued aliyah for his neshama. If anyone wants to sponsor an individual class, 3 Ideas in 30 Minutes, please reach out to Lee or Chelsea in the show office. And again, we always appreciate those sponsorships. Okay, 3 Ideas in 30 Minutes, Parshas Bishalach, jam-packed Parsha, so much to talk about, and yet I'm not going to start with Parshas Bishalach at all. That's a curveball. I'm going to start from somewhere else, and that is the story of Avram Avinu. Parshas Bishalach, Avram Avinu. Well, the Pasuk tells us, we know, that when Avram gets up in the morning, Vayashkem Avram Baboke Vayachavosh Es Chamoro, Avram gets up in the morning, and he gets his donkey ready, Vayikach Eshneine Aravi Toves Yitzchak Beno, he gets the two lads together, and Yitzchak as well. We know the lads are Yishmael and Eliezer. Vayivaka Atzei Ola, and he chops the wood, cuts the wood in half. Vayakem, Vayelech, Vayakam, Vayelech, Halamakom Asher Amar Elohim. And then he prepares his journey. Now the Ramban on this pasuk points out that there's an enormous anomaly in what Avram Avinu did. After all, Avram Avinu was going on a long journey. Anyone who's ever been on a long journey knows that what do you try to do? You try to minimize how much you have to carry on the journey. And so if there are things that you can get there, why would you schlep it along with yourself the entire time? The best analogy I could give you is going on vacation. When you're going on vacation, so there are two approaches. You can either load up the car with all the cereal and the milk and the fruits and the banana, whatever, I don't know, peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, clearly what I eat, right? You load all that up, and your car is going to be overflowing, and your kids are going to have stuff coming out of every crevice of the car. Or what you can do is say, you know what? There's a supermarket where we're going. So instead of buying everything here, packing it into the car, schlepping it with us, schlepping it all the way to our destination, we'll drive to the destination, go to Publix, Walmart, Trader Joe's, wherever you shop, and then we'll just buy the stuff there. That is not what Avram Avinu does here. As the Ramban points out, in all certainty, Avram Avinu would be able to have found wood where he was going. Why then was he so insistent on Vayivaka Atzei Ola, that he was insistent on finding the wood, not just finding the wood, but preparing the wood before he even embarks on his journey? Says the Ramban, Vayivaka Atzei Ola, Zrizu So B'mitzvah. This shows Avram's zrizas, his zealousness, his alacrity in performing the mitzvahs. Ulai lo yimsa sham b'makamahu eitzim v'holchim shlosha yamim. Avram Avinu was afraid. Maybe there would be no Publix. Maybe there would be no Trader Joe's. Maybe there would be no Walmart. To travel all the way to the destination just to find out that there's no viable supermarket, and then you got to travel back, that's a bad idea. So Avram Avinu, because he was so zealous to perform the mitzvah, he says, you know what? I'm not taking any chances. And so he collects the wood, he splits the wood, and he carries it on his back for 3 days, all because of Zerizas B'mitzvos. Now, that did not need to happen. That is almost supernatural, what Avram Avinu does. Because the love that he's displaying for Hashem is not a rational love. Any of us probably would not have done what Avram Avinu did. We would have gone to the destination and expected to find the wood there. A, because we wouldn't have wanted to schlep it. B, because we would have been more than happy to have found an out for why it is that we didn't have to sacrifice our son. Says Rav Kook, Haya efshar lismoch limso etzim be'echad ayarim. Avram Avinu could certainly have found trees where he was going. V'kal v'chomer haya efshar lakacha, says gizrei etzim. He had to split the wood where he was? You didn't think that he'd find little pieces of wood where he was going, and he would have avoided the hard work of chopping the wood in half? Right? Of course Avram Avinu would. Says Rav Kook, Aval ha'ava ha'elokis ha'elyona. Avram's deep burning desire of love for Hashem, ha'overes kol teva enoshi, which supersedes all natural forms of love. In other words, yes, naturally, Avram shouldn't have had to do that. But his love for Hashem was so much, it was a supernatural love. He shebara b'leiv ha'av ha'kadosh, it was burning inside Avram. Kedei lezarzo l'achim gamas ahidr, and that made him want to go the extra mile for Hashem. Could Avram have gotten away with less? Yes. But Avram Avinu was overflowing with this burning sense of love for Hashem that he wanted to do it perfectly. And so he expresses this love that says Rav Kook is ha'overes kol teva enoshi, which supersedes all rules of nature, which supersedes what we would have expected naturally from any other human being. Now, you might be asking for yourself, Rabbi Moskowitz, you must be confused because it's Parshas B'Shalach this week, not Parshas Vayera. And the answer I will give you is the following Medrash. Says the Medrash in Shmos Rabbah Chaf Aleph Ches. Bizchus Avram Avi Ani Bokea Lahem Esayam. Hashem says, in the merit of Avram Avinu, I am going to split the sea. How do I know? Bavur Ma Sha'asa. Because of what Avram did. Shene'emar Vayivaka Atzei Ola. Pay attention to the words here. The word says Vayivaka. Avram splits the wood. Ve'omer, and over here in Parshas B'Shalach, it says Vayivaku Hamayim, and the water split. And so the Medrash tells us that in the merit of Vayivaka Tzeola, in the merit of Avram splitting the wood, so the Jewish people are rewarded with Vayibaku Hamayim, the water splits. Now obviously, when Chazal do something like this, and they link two stories together, it's not simply because there's a cute play on words. Oh, this pasuk says this, and this pasuk says that. It must be these two storylines are meant for each other. There's obviously something a little bit deeper here. What is the connection between the story of Avram Avinu and the story of Kriyas Yamsuf? Let me read for you a comment by Rav Kook in his continuation of this essay, where Rav Kook says that if you paid attention, you'll have remembered that everything Avram did was me'al hateva. There was the natural way of how a normal person would have done something. Avram Avinu goes above and beyond nature. His love for Hashem supersedes nature. And now we come to Kriyas Yamsuf. Umizeh ba kesher shel hofasam shel hanisim ba'olam. Now we come to the connection with Kriyas Yamsuf. The same way Avram supersedes nature, Hashem says, I'm going to supersede nature on behalf of the Jewish people. Naturally, put yourself in the Jewish people's shoes. They're running out of Egypt. They come to the Yamsuf, and there is a vicious army barreling down towards them. And they look in one direction, and there's the ocean. They look in the other direction, and there is this army that wants to kill them and massacre them. And if you were living at that time, and you asked yourself, is there any natural way that I'm going to escape this scenario, you would have said, not a chance in the world. Naturally, there's no chance for survival. And yet Hashem comes along and says, just as Avram Avinu overcame nature, so too I'm going to overcome nature. And he splits the sea. Just as Avram Avinu went above and beyond what is naturally expected, Hashem says, I too am going to go above and beyond what is expected. And so when we talk about Jewish survival, and when we talk about Jewish continuity, whether it's the famous quote of Mark Twain or so many others, it's important to remember Netzach Yisrael Lo Yishaker, the greatest miracle in world history is the survival and thriving of the Jewish people. Our survival defies the laws of nature. We have been persecuted, oppressed, beaten, murdered, massacred, you name it. It has happened to us in the last 2,000 years of exile. And yet we're still here. That is the greatest miracle in the last 2,000 years, that despite the efforts of so many of our enemies, we are still here. That supersedes nature. Naturally, we should have been gone a long time ago. But Hashem comes along and says, the same way Avram Avinu superseded nature with his love for me, I'm going to override nature in my love for you. At the Yamsuf, that's going to mean that when you were caught between that proverbial rock and a hard place, I'm going to split the sea for you. Historically, it means that even though everyone wants to kill you and massacre you and persecute you, I'm going to allow, I'm going to give my Jewish people survival. And so in the merit of Avram Avinu, Hashem splits the sea. In the merit of Avram Avinu going above and beyond what's expected, Hashem says, I too am going to go above and beyond what's expected. We see this in a different medrash as well. The pasuk says, Az Yashir Moshe, that Az, what does the word Az mean? So the medrash, this is a medrash Tanchuma in Parshas Beshalach. The medrash says that Az is how is two letters, Aleph and Zion. Aleph is one numerically, Zion is seven numerically. Says the medrash, Hareshmona, that if you put the numerical value of Az together, the gematria is the number 8. Why is that so significant? Because Amar of Levi, Amar Moshe, Bischus Hamila, Shenitna Lishmona, Nikrayam. That in the merit of Brismila, that is the number 8, that's done on the 8th day, then we have the word Az, Az Yashir Hashem split the sea. What does Brismila have to do with splitting the sea? It's the exact same answer. We know that in Judaism, the number 7 represents nature. The number 8 represents above nature, supernatural, the laws that supersede nature. And so what Hashem is telling us is when you give a bris milah, when you're willing to do that to your children, to create the sign that they are part of my army and that they are loyal to me, in the merit of you overcoming really an unnatural thing for a parent to do, which is to do that to their child, to circumcise their child at 8 days old. Hashem says, if you're willing to overcome your nature, I'll overcome my nature. And so it's in the merit of Shmona, it's in the merit of Bris Milah, when you, the Jewish people, are going to override your natural parental inclinations, and Hashem says, I'm going to override nature as well. Bischus Hamila, Nikra Hayam. In the merit of Bris Milah, which is 8, I'm going to split the sea. Az, Aleph Zion is the number 8. I too am going to supersede nature. And so idea number 1 is a reflection upon the connection between Avram and Kriyas Yamsuf, where Hashem says, if you, the Jewish people, override your natural tendencies and nonetheless show your faith in me, prove your loyalty to me, show your alacrity and your zealousness and performance of mitzvahs, even though all of those are unnatural things to do, Hashem says, then I will supersede nature on your behalf. I'll split the sea. I'll split the sea not just at that moment in history, but in a metaphoric sense, I'll split the sea for you throughout our history. What a beautiful idea from Rav Kook, from these two amazing midrashim, linking stories that we otherwise would not have associated together. I know that was a little bit longer than normally for one of our ideas, but I think it's such a powerful idea. I think there's so much to talk about in terms of the miracle of Jewish history, in terms of the miracle of Kriyas Yamsuf. That is idea number 1. Idea number 2 comes from after Kriyas Yamsuf. Pasuk says, Vayavo Marasa, that the Jewish people come to a place called Mara, Marasa. Velo yachlu lishtos mayim mimara. They were not able to drink the water. Kimarim heim, because they were bitter. Al kein karashmo Mara. Therefore, they called the name of the place Mara. Now, you'll notice that the pasuk says that they couldn't drink water, right, from Mara. Why? Kimarim heim, because marim heim, they were bitter. We assume that what was bitter there, that what was bitter there is the water. And yet, suggests Nechama Leibovich in a beautiful insight into this pasuk, which can be found in the book that came out about her a number of years ago, which was called, I'm escaping it right now, but I'll find it as we are teaching. But in the book that came out a few years ago, hold on, let me just Google it quickly. Okay, it's called Nechama Leibovich, Teacher and Bible Scholar. It was put out by Urim Publications. So she makes an amazing insight here. Amazing. First of all, what other class do you go from Rav Kook to Nechama Leibovich? Here she goes. She says, if you paid attention, the pasuk says, Kimarim Heim, that they were bitter. We assume it's the water that's bitter. And yet, if you look at the Medrash over there, the Medrash Tanchuma, it says, Kimarim Heim, for they were bitter. Doesn't mean that the Jewish people were bitter, the Medrash says. It means that their actions were bitter. That is the Medrash. Says Nechama Volevich on that idea. She says, for they were bitter, the generation was bitter in its deeds. Everything depends on the person. If he wishes, he will control himself. And if he wishes, he will become embittered. The truth is, this should really be a drasha that I should have used for the Shabbos, but perhaps in a future idea. Says Nechama Volevich, Kimarim Haim, were the waters bitter? Of course the waters were bitter. But you know what else was bitter? The Jewish people. And you and I both know that everything in life depends on perspective. Everything in life depends on the mindset and the attitude that I bring to any circumstance that I find myself in. And so I might find myself in a bitter situation. I might find myself in a situation where there's a pervasive negativity. And yet, the Pasuk is coming to teach us, Kimarim Haim, that what really made that water bitter more than anything else was not that the water was bitter, but it was that the Jewish people were bitter. And so therefore, Nechama Volevich concludes, she writes, they could not drink the water at Mara, for they were bitter. Everything depends on the temperament of the person. Everything depends on the outlook, the mindset, and the temperament of the person. You could have two people that encounter the same exact situation. And I see this in my line of work every single day, whether it's, I don't want to give you, every single day, I see this example. You have two people, one person who encounters a situation who inarguably is a challenging situation in life, and they encounter it, and they have faith in Hashem, and they let go, and they put a smile on their face despite the situation that they find themselves in, and they're optimistic, and there's a certain serenity that overcomes them. And then you have another person who comes the exact same situation in life, but their mindset, their outlook, their starting point is one from bitterness, and all they see around them is negativity. All they see around them is more bitterness. All they see around them is room to complain. And so what Nechama Volevich is teaching us is that we all, at various points in our life, cross the proverbial Yamsuf. We all find ourselves in that situation where we feel caught between the rock and the hard place, and we have to cross over the sea. And when we do, it's filled with hardship, and it's filled with difficulty, and it's filled with challenges. And so at every stage of our life, as we're crossing those seas, in the battles of our life, there's going to be those moments where we encounter the waters of Mara. We encounter those challenges. We encounter that adversity. But what it all depends on is the person. It all depends on Kimarim Haim. Are you going to approach it with a mindset of bitterness? Are you going to approach it with a mindset of complaining and looking for the negativity in everything? Or are you going to look at it with positivity, with a bias towards positivity, with a bias towards looking for the optimism and the light at the end of the tunnel? That, says Nechama Leibovich, is the message of Kimarim Haim. We assume, Vayavo Marasa V'lo Yachlu Lishtos Mayim Imara, they couldn't drink the water. Kimarim Haim. We assume that it was the waters that were bitter. Says Nechama Leibovich, based on the comment of the Medrash, that no, that it was the Jewish people that were bitter. The Jewish people came tomorrow with a negativity bias, with a bias to looking for the bad and for complaining. Comes along the Medrash and says, no, it's all about your perspective. It's all about your mindset. Two people can come to the exact same situation. One will see the positive, one will see the negative. Our job is to work on ourselves, to not approach situations in life with a bias towards negativity, but rather with a positivity bias, which again, if we were developing in a drasha, we would talk about a positivity bias, the psychology behind it. This week we were spoke about a lot about the Lubavitch Rebbe. We had a big event at BRS on Sunday night. The Lubavitch Rebbe excelled. He indoctrinated an entire generation with seeing that positivity bias. In fact, there was a whole book that was put out just on the Lubavitch Rebbe's approach to a positivity bias. That is this comment by Nechama Leibovich. Kimarim Haim. It wasn't the water that was bitter. Yes, the water may not have been perfect. It may have been murky. It may have been not tasted right. But Kimarim Haim, you know what was really bitter then? It was the Jewish people that were really bitter at that moment in time. We have to work to transform our outlook, to transform our mindset from one that always looks for the negative to one that always looks for the positive, to look for the light in any situation that we find ourselves in. That is idea number two. Again, you want to talk about a conversation that could be so juicy and inspiring at your Shabbos table, talk about that. Talk about how we can work on ourselves to see the positive in every situation, not kimarim heim, to see the bitterness of every situation. I happen to have some amazing stuff on this, again, maybe for a future drasha or for a future shir. Idea number three comes from a whole different genre. I'm telling you, we are going from one end to the other. We started with Avram Avinu and Rav Kook. We came to Nechama Leibovich in the story of Mara, and now we go to the story of Yaakov. Haha, Yaakov. Rabbi, what are you doing? Avram and Yaakov, you're in the wrong book of the Torah. Give me a second. This comes from the Sefer Megala Amukos. It's a beautiful idea. Pasuk says, Ve'achrei chen yasa achiv, that after Esav comes out, Yaakov comes out, Vayikra shmo Yaakov, and they called him Yaakov. Why? Ve'yado chezes ba'akev Esav. Why was he named Yaakov? Because his hand was on the heel, the ankle of his brother Esav. Now, the obvious question is that the word Akev is not the word Yaakov. There's an added letter there. And so where in the world does the Yud come from the word Akev to the word Yaakov? Says the Megala Amukos that it comes from the word Esav. Because Rashi says, Lefisha haya nasa v'nigmar b'saro, that because Esav was born complete, his hair looked like someone who was much older than themselves, kiben shanim harbe. He was like born a 50-year-old. Now if that's the case, then his name should not have been Esav. His name, if he was complete, should have been Asui, Ayin, Shin, Vav, Yud. Where do we get Esav from? So the Megala Muko says, V'yado chezes ba'akev Esav, that when Yaakov Avinu grabs onto the Akev of Esav, says the Megala Muko, that he was really stealing the Yud from Esav and putting it into his name. That the Yud in Yaakov comes from what should have been the Yud in the name Esav. The word Asui, that Yud at the end, gets taken out by Yaakov. Yaakov steals the Yud. He goes from Akev to Yaakov. Esav goes from Asui to Akev. Beautiful idea, Rabbi. What in the world are you talking about? Seems very Kabbalistic. Asui, Esav, Akev, Yaakov. He steals the Yud. What are we talking about here? So here is the beautiful insight of Rav Gedalia Shor. Rav Gedalia Shor in his Or Gedaliah says, a most magnificent idea. The Pasuk says, Az Yashir. Yashir, we know from Gemara's, is Milashon Atid. It is future tense. In fact, the Gemara in Sanhedrin tells us that how do we know that there's Tchias HaMesim in the Torah? So the Gemara says, from the words Az Yashir. Yashir, they will sing in the future. When is that in the future? That is Tchias HaMesim. That is Yemos HaMashiach. So the letter Yud, Yashir, is an indication of future. Where am I going with all this? Listen to what Rav Gedalia Shor says. He says that the Yud symbolizes the future. Remember, Yaakov steals the Yud from Esav. Yaakov starts off as Akev, becomes Yaakov when he steals the letter Yud from Esav. Says Rav Gedalia Shor, because that's the calling card of the Jewish people. Calling card of the Jewish people is that they don't just live for the here and now in the present, but rather what defines us is that we are a future tense people. We are a people that is always looking towards the future. And so whereas the rest of the world lives for the here and now, for the pleasure of this moment, we Jews understand that there's a much bigger picture. That there's something called eternity, there's something called Olam Haba, that there's a trajectory of Jewish history, that I don't just live for the here and now, but I live for the future. Now, on a national level, this has enormous implications. What gave Jewish people throughout the last 2,000 years of exile, what gave them the backbone, what gave them the ability to die al Kiddush Hashem, to sacrifice themselves for their Judaism? Well, if I'm only living for the here and now, I would never do something like that. I would never die al Kiddush Hashem, because after all, why would I give up my here and now for Hashem, for eternity, for Olam Haba, for Nitzchias? So on a national level, it means this is what has given the Jewish people the fortitude, the ability to die al Kiddush Hashem. It's their recognition of the future, that I'm not just living in the here and now, but I'm also living for eternity. I'm living for Olam Haba. As Yashir, Yaakov, built into the Jewish people is that sense of future. But it also impacts us on a much more micro level as well. Because we know that there's always a tension between immediate gratification, instant gratification, and looking towards the future of what might be better for me in the long term. Think about this in terms of a teenager. Teenagers are all about instant gratification. Part of what we try to do to teenagers is to teach them not just to live for the here and now, not just to make decisions that might give them pleasure in the moment, but rather to look at the entire trajectory of their lives. What's going to help them as they're applying for jobs and applying for colleges and getting married and raising children? So don't just live for the here and now, because if you're all about instant gratification, well, you might do some things that are not in your best interest. If you're all about instant gratification and instant pleasure, you might do things that might feel good right now, but you might not like that 5, 10, 15 years from now when you are applying for a job and your boss goes on your Facebook or Instagram account and sees, they did that 10 years ago. Now, you might have enjoyed that in the moment, but you're not going to enjoy that when the boss pulls up that Instagram feed at the interview and says, can you explain why you thought that was a good, responsible, mature thing to do? And so on a macro level, this sense of future, of Yaakov, the Yud, as Yashir, that is what has allowed us to overlook the temporary suffering, to overlook the temporary sacrifices that Hashem has asked us to make, and to look towards the future, to recognize that there's a much broader picture of Jewish history. We are simply one piece of that puzzle. And therefore, I'm willing to give up my life. I'm willing to sacrifice in the here and now because I recognize, as Yashir, I recognize that there is a future for the Jewish people that I am sacrificing for. On a micro level, on an individual level, I think it has enormous implications. Because this idea of Az Yashir, of looking towards the future, of the Yaakov stealing the Yud from Esav, is a reminder that when we make personal choices for ourselves and for our family, it is so easy to get caught up in the here and now. It is so easy to get caught up in instant gratification and the pleasure of the moment. Rather, what should we be looking towards? We should be looking towards the future. Says the mission of Pirkei Avos, Ezo Chacham Haroa Es Hanolad, that we define a Chacham, we define wisdom, not by someone who looks to do what's best for him in the present moment, but rather we define a Chacham by someone who looks towards the future, who's someone who is an Az Yashir type of Jew, who's someone who is a descendant of Yaakov Avinu, who stole the Yud from Esav because he wanted to give himself that sense of Atid, of the future, the letter Yud, is a representation of that future. I don't know about you, I thought these were three really magnificent ideas. None of them come from myself, so I can tell you that. Idea number one came from the connection between the story of Avram and the story of the splitting of the sea. The Vayivaka Tseola, Avram cuts the wood, Vayivakua Maim Hashem splits the sea, cuts the sea, says the Medrash, that it's because of Avram Avinu, who overcame nature on behalf of Hashem. Hashem says, I'm going to overcome nature on your behalf as well. It was the Bris Mila. Az, Aleph, and Zion is the number 8. Hashem says, B'schus HaMila, in the merit of the Mila, which is on the 8th day, I'm going to split the sea in that merit. Why? Because when we override our natural tendencies, when we overcome our natural human tendencies on behalf of Hashem, Hashem says, I'm going to override nature on your behalf as well. So much to think about there as well. The Nitzchias, the eternality of the Jewish people. Where does that miracle come from? Because Hashem says, when you overcome nature for me, I'll overcome nature for you. That was idea number one. Idea number two came from Nechama Leibovitz. Really a beautiful insight. Kimarim Haim. We assume that what was bitter was the water. Says Nechama Leibovitz, based on the Medrash, no, that everything depends on the person. If he wishes, he'll control himself. He'll approach everything with a bias towards positivity. But if he wishes, he will become embittered, right? It's all about how we look at things. Everything depends on the temperament, the perspective, the outlook of the person. We are always going to encounter those gale force winds in our life. We are always going to encounter the seas in the deserts, in the battles, in the adversity in our life. Everything depends on our outlook. Whether it becomes the sweet waters or whether it becomes the bitter water. is all going to depend on our perspective and on our outlook in that situation. And lastly, this really extraordinary idea from Rav Gedalia Shor in his Or Gedaliahu, where he says that the word Az Yashir, the letter Yud, is a reminder of the future. He says this was the calling card of Yaakov. Yaakov steals the letter Yud from Esav. Yaakov originally should have been Akev, but he steals the letter Yud from Esav because that is the defining characteristic of the Jewish people, that we don't just live for the here and now, but we live with a sense of the future. On a macro level, we as the Jews, it means we live for the future. We recognize that we might have to make sacrifices now, but we're willing to do it for the future of the Jewish people. Think about, I wrote about in the weekly this week, we're having Reb Bender here for Shabbos, Torah, Mesorah, Shabbaton. Think about Jewish education. Logically, it makes no sense whatsoever that we invest hundreds of thousands of dollars per child just to give a Jewish education. It makes no sense. Defines the laws of nature. People think we're all crazy. But you know why we do it? Because we realize that it's an investment in the future. We don't just live for the here and now. We live for the future. On an individual level, it means that when I'm talking to my children or my grandchildren about making choices, I'm reminding them that life is not just about instant gratification and about instant pleasure, but life is about looking towards the future, making decisions that are not just best for you in the here and now, but are going to be for the betterment of you in the future as well. Three ideas. I think this was a jam-packed week. A lot to think about. Hopefully, I will have enhanced your Erev Shabbos. Hopefully, I'll provided meaningful conversation for your Shabbos table. And with that, I wish everyone a beautiful, meaningful, and inspirational Shabbos. I apologize. I have to jump off a little bit quickly. I have another meeting. But I wish everyone a beautiful, beautiful Shabbos.